You've heard me talk a lot about private label, and Andy Slammons is back with a new free course. It's the SMART Private Label course. S stands for selecting a product. M, manufacture with the right supplier. So important. Amazing photos, keyword research, and listing preparation is the A. R stands for ranking your product to the first page of search. We all know how critical that is. And then T is taking your product to the top of Amazon and beyond. This is a free course. It's going to help you get that foundation to do your own private label productness. You want to work smarter. Get it smarter. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. Tell Andy I sent you.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 195, QFAM. Now, his name is not Q, but that's what he goes by. And I love his personality. He is he's got a smile from ear to ear. He's so enthusiastic about what he does. And I think that that's what it takes to create that lifestyle business that we're all talking about, is you want to figure out what's the life for you, your why, right? Well, Q has figured it out, and man, he's just killing it. This segment, I pepper him, as Andy Slammons would say, with a zillion questions about Goodwill. He worked in Goodwill in their e-commerce division, and I love the story of understanding how other large businesses break their processes down. And man, he does such a great job explaining it. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, and I'm excited because, you know, I get a lot of requests from sellers to do more eBay interviews and Etsy interviews. Etsy's are harder to find. Not that there aren't people that are successful on it. They're just not in the same circles that I travel as much. And so I'm always looking for one. So if you know somebody, reach out to me. But eBay, you know, I just gave a talk this past weekend, and eBay is having a resurgence in some circles because of changes on Amazon. Everybody went to Amazon, but a lot of people kept their toes into eBay. And a gentleman today has kept his toes here. And boy, he is really just doing so great. Q. Fam. Welcome, Q.
Hello there.
I love the Q. That's it. That's the name we're using is Q. I could see that James Bond. Hey, it's Q. is that where you got it from, right? So you are a pretty decent sized eBay seller. In addition, you have a booth at a flea market, but not like a little booth. I mean, I saw the pictures of it when you were doing a live thing. I mean, it was massive. I mean, you got a lot of game systems, and I want to talk about that because you're so smart the way you do it. It really fascinates me, the two methods that you use. And I'm interested to hear how you got started. So let's start back in the beginning. You went to school because you were told to go to school, or did you desire to go to school?
I desired to go to college.
Okay.
I mean, it was always good to, in my opinion, to have a degree just in case of worst case scenario or anything like that.
Were your parents entrepreneurs, or are they the college, go to work and work for a company for 30 years type?
Actually, that's where I got my, you know, my business mindset from. They actually, my dad was a mechanic and so forth, but then as he got older, he decided to open up a convenience store.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then my mom, she did real estate, and also she had a convenience store, so.
Isn't hers. So sales background, I noticed in there too, right? Good.
Yep.
Personality, right? And that takes a lot. I could tell that you're very outgoing, right? You're like me. You're shy on the inside. That's what I always tell people. I'm just shy on the inside. I mean, I am outgoing. And so that's probably served you pretty well. So were you doing any, I mean, I assume you were working in the convenience store, probably a million hours and getting paid nothing. Did you have your own side business, or did you attempt to sell your own stuff in the convenience store or anywhere else?
No, my parents wanted me to focus on school and be involved in activity. But every time they'll come home, they'll be counting their money and discussing over numbers and stuff like that. So I just start picking things up from there. And then they like to be cost efficient, right? So they're always looking for deals and stuff. And where they buy stuff, and then they'll tag me along while they're buying inventory and stuff, and I start picking up that. So,
and in that world, pennies matter, right?
Right. Yes.
Right. And so you know, everybody always wonders how a dollar store makes it, right? They don't pay more than 33 cents, I think it is, for an item. And that's mm-hmm. how, you know, when you pay 33 cents and you sell it a dollar, but you sell 1,000 of them a day, it's a mm-hmm. it's a good profit, right? And so in the convenience store business, it's all about convenience and carrying the right items. I always wonder, you know, there's a lot of items that don't appear to sell. Is that one of the challenges in that business, figuring out what's going to sell?
Right. When you're selling anything, you got to at least have like a 3 to 6 month a trend analysis report to figure out what your products are selling and what are not. So
were they into that?
Yeah, they were mostly into the convenient, but not so much, because we also had like a place where you will cash your check, right? So that's where, and then they'll get like maybe 1 to 10% off of your check, because there's a lot of people who didn't want to go set up a bank. So they were just cashing their check, and it'll be like thousands and hundreds of dollars. And that's where their main money source was from.
Okay.
From cashing in checks.
So a true convenience, right? There's a convenience factor for not having a bank account for some people. And, you know, I get it. Especially if they don't need it, right? Cause there is a hassle to having a bank account. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. So they made their money that way, and probably selling cigarettes and stuff like that, lottery tickets and junk like that.
Yeah, cigarettes and drinks was like the main one, like I would see. Then they started cutting down, like offering hot dogs and stuff, because that was like, it was very costly managing that. And then we also used to have our arcade system, and actually that's where my mom asked me to help out. Like we saw a lot of candy, so. But the kids at my age at the time were playing video games, but then they'll try to steal candy because the candy was next to the arcade machine. So she asked me to sit there and monitor from them from stealing, because it actually costs money when someone steals from you. So.
Oh, yeah, that's a real cost, because it comes out of your parents' pocket, period, right?
Correct.
They had to pay for it, right? Nobody thinks about that. Because a lot of times you can return items. I don't know how it is in the convenient business, but at some retail stores they can return items, right? Back to the mm-hmm. manufacturer or distributor. Usually it's a distributor, but you're not returning something that's missing. You sold it, period, in their mind.
Correct.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you picked up a bunch of things. When I imagine, though, there were a lot of nights and weekends for your parents, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Were you attracted to that?
Well, actually, I wasn't aware that was not normal, because I'd be talking to friends. I'd say, oh, I got to grab some lunch now. It'll be lunch at like 11 o'clock. Usually they come home from the convenience store exactly around 10 or 11, and then we'll eat lunch around that time. And then, but a long time ago, when they were first starting off, they'll come home at 12 at midnight. And they'll feed us like something at 1 a.m. in the morning.
That was the time you ate as a family.
Yeah, as a family, 1 a.m. in the morning. So that's where I thought it was normal. But then when I started to say, hey, man, I got to go eat something right now at, you know, at 11 p.m. or 12 p.m. 12 a.m. in the morning, they're like, you're eating dinner right now? I was like, yeah. And then they're like, no, that's not normal, dude. I was like, oh, I was not aware of that. So.
That's funny. Were your parents born in this country?
No, they were immigrants. So
okay.
I'm the first gen. So
you're first gen. And so that culture difference mm-hmm. It had to be very difficult for you being in both cultures, right?
Right. There's a big, huge conflict how Americans were raised and then how the Vietnamese culture was raised. So, but it took a while for my parents to finally accept the American culture.
Right, right. Well, they're serving them, so they kind of have to be forced that way, right?
Right, right.
Now, do you have siblings?
Yes. I have a brother and three sisters. So.
Are any of them entrepreneurs?
No. I'm
okay.
The only one.
You're it. It
yep.
rubbed off on you.
Yep.
What do your parents think of what you do?
My parents were at first like, they wanted me to go into like, become a doctor or pharmacy, like a typical Asian culture, but I didn't really like that. But then they saw me going to business, and then At first, they were kind of hesitant about it, because back then, when I was younger, I used to spend my money like recklessly. But
like every kid, right?
Yeah, like every kid. And then they saw how successful I was, and then they're like, "Oh wow!" So, I mean, it took them a while, but they're really proud of me now. So,
but you have we should say you have a business degree. You did go to college, and you got a business degree, and
right? Yeah.
So you're using it. Here's something that's interesting to think about. Your parents would have worked, you know, 24/7 in that store, and they're watching the way you. I mean, I know you have the flea market thing, and we'll talk about that. But online, you might only put in a few hours, and yet you'll sell as you're sitting there. Have they witnessed your little cash register sound going off at dinner or a different place, and you get a little bit of smile saying, "Hey, just sold something as I'm sitting here having dinner." Did that ring a bell with them yet?
Oh yeah, yeah. They heard the sound, and I'll show them my numbers and so forth, and they're really impressed with that.
Compared to what they had to do, they had to trade their time for those dollars, right? I mean, that was the way it was. You had to sit in the convenience store to trade that, where you are sitting at the kitchen table and you're trading, you know? It has to be interesting for them.
Right, right. And so, yep. Hmm.
There's a different generation, right? I mean, it really is. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've interviewed that are in other countries traveling. All right, just talked with Nate Slammons yesterday. Nate's a big seller with Andy and Leron, and they have the company. And he's down in Florida for 3 weeks running the back end of their business completely from Florida for 3 weeks, him and his family. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, that's super awesome.
You know, think about that. Okay, so you decide to go into business. Now, you only recently went full-time. So you were working somewhere, and you started eBay, but you've been selling for a long time. So how did that get started?
How I got started? Well, to be honest with you, before I decided to go back, when I was working my corporate job, I was working at other reselling place, right? And I decided to take a break from reselling, because I used to run and supervise like the Shop Goodwill and the Austin Goodwill e-commerce site.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
So you got some experience there.
Yeah, correct. So I decided to take a break from reselling. And then I was like, you know what? Let me just go into something challenging. So that's when I got that associate auditor position.
Okay.
Right? And then I realized I wasn't getting paid as much as I should be. So I started doing reside on the side again. And then because I learned a lot from the Goodwill, I said, wow. Because back then, I used to only focus on video games, but then I started expanding my product knowledge. And then I started just doing a test run for the next 3 years. And then I just noticed, like, the improvements. And I was like, you know what? I'm really good at this. So I realized the time, if I put in it full time as a reseller, I would get more of an outcome leaving my corporate position. So that's what happened.
Well, and we are not going to dodge that Goodwill story, because that's a good story. So uh-huh. You went to work at Goodwill to run their e-commerce business. So you got to walk us through that. So how big is Austin's Goodwill store that you were at? Is it a big location?
Yes. The location at the time when I was there, they were building, they had about like 20 plus retail stores, right? And because there's 20 plus retail stores, all the retail stores will send all their good stuff to our store, to the e-commerce department, and then from there we'll research it, we'll process, then research the prices, and then list it for them. I'll take pictures, list it for them, and then how it works is, believe it or not, when you ever look into a Shop Goodwill and you ever see like super high shipping prices, you're like, wow, where's all these shipping prices come from? Well, that shipping price, that additional money from the shipping price, that's what pays the e-commerce department, believe it or not.
Okay, so there's a markup, right? So there's a handling charge in some businesses, they would call it. So there's and do you know how much that would be roughly? Or is it a percentage? Did they do it as?
So wherever, after the shipping cost, wherever that percentage is at the very end, it goes to the e-commerce department. It fluctuates based on the price of the shipping.
Okay.
So
Okay, so let's think about this way, right? So let's just say you're a prep center, right, and your cost is, you know, to operate the prep center is, you know, a dollar. So that dollar, or let's say it's $10, right? So that $10 gets split amongst the customers as a handling charge to cover that cost, and then there's a margin on top of it, right? And so in this case, Goodwill is using it to completely offset that department, and it didn't
Correct.
Put they didn't put that charge on each store, so it really
No.
is a standalone tower, I guess, or a channel. Interesting. That's an
Right.
interesting way to do it.
Yeah, because the stores need to hit their budget, right? So all the what the items sold for final cost without the shipping cost, wherever what that sale price is that's what's being sent to their store to help reach their store budget.
Huh. So wait, because I don't think I got that. So tell me again. So this is Steve's store, right? I'm running a store in South Austin. Do I send you my merchandise to the e-commerce thing, or do I keep it in my store first?
It's just based on your preference. So here locally at the Austin retail stores, they have separate budgets, okay? They have their retail store budget,
okay.
Right? Then they have their bid case budget where every Saturday they have a live auction.
Right.
Okay. That's another source. They have
and that's those glass counters around in the front of the store usually?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Usually when they have a
I haven't been in one in a long time, so I'm not really familiar with it, but if I remember correctly, most of my glass counter and I don't are they the one that uses a book where people bid in, that kind of thing?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So binder.
Bid, and then the third one is their e-commerce budget, right?
Oh, okay. So there's three revenue sources in each one of these stores.
Yes, and it's very challenging. So there'd be like a conflict. Well, I want to put this in my live auction instead of sending it to e-commerce because the thing with e-commerce is that they will have to ship it on transportation, and then it takes like 3 or 4 days to arrive, and then it takes – because there's like – 20 other stores that you have to process and list. It'll take like a couple of days, maybe up to 7 days before your items get listed.
So wait, so I'm sending it from my store to your location? Mm-hmm. Is that what happens?
Correct.
Okay, so I send, let me just say I have one video game and Steve's store down in South Austin. I decide this is designed perfectly to go on e-commerce.
Right.
So I put it in a box and send it on a common truck. I imagine there's a truck that goes or whatever, or I have to wait until it's big enough and send it to your location. How far away is that?
It's all based on the distance. Some of them are maybe literally 5 minutes away, and some of them are literally 30, 45 minutes away.
And does each state have one, like an e-commerce location, or is one serve many states?
It's based on city.
Okay.
So,
oh, okay. All right. So well, I'm just interested in the whole thing because I don't think I've ever had anybody explain the way that company works. So they have, you know, so I guess it probably depends on the size of the state and all that kind of jazz. So Austin's big enough it can support its own e-commerce centralized center. Is it the back of another store that just happens to have the space that they made into an e-commerce center? Or is it a standalone, we only do e-commerce from this location?
In this location, this one's at the bins.
Okay.
So they have the bins, and then this building serves the bins, and then it serves the job center, and then in the very back is the e-commerce department. So
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's three departments in one building.
Okay, so Steve Center is sending that video game, but he's also sending the stuff that he doesn't think will sell or didn't sell. Correct.
Correct.
Okay.
Or won't sell as much at their live auction. That's the judgment based on the manager in charge.
But I'm also sending you my stuff that I just don't think will sell. Period. Right. And I want them in the bins. Right.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm just saying the stuff here. I don't think this is good for my store. I'm putting it in some type of Gaylord box or bins or whatever. However they transport it. And in addition, there's this golden box. This is my e-commerce box that I think I'll get more on e-commerce than I sell in my store, however, not as good as what I can get in my gold case up front. Fair?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct.
I think I understand the process. All right. Let's do this because I want to think about it a second. I know I'm beating you to death on this, but it's interesting to me because I think it sounds to me like this is your model that you brought into your own life. And I think this
yep.
is very, you know, dude,
I
love it. I think it's so, why reinvent the wheel? All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. you know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-commerce. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her. And most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plate. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-commerce, the number four, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. Solutionsforecommerce.com. Man, I sit up a little taller when I talk to somebody that enthusiastic. It just gets me jazzed, man. I get really pumped up. And in this segment, we spend quite a bit of time working through the process and talking it through. I love his flea market booth that he has and how the processes he has in place with that. And if you search, I'm going to have some links in here for his YouTube channel. You'll see some pictures of that stuff. Man, have you ever thought about that? Something I wouldn't want to do, but I get the reason that he does it. People bring him merchandise to sell. Very smart businessman. Very smart. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Q and I'm beating him to death on the Goodwill, but I just want to understand it because I'm thinking that Steve doesn't understand it. So there's probably somebody else in the world who doesn't understand. I might be the only guy. Maybe there's two of us. So, okay. So I think we understand how they send stuff to their main junk center / profit center of e-commerce. So Steve's little item gets sent up there. There must be some kind of tracking technique to know that it came from my store and it's going to go into e-commerce to get put up for sale. So that location then creates the listing, takes the pictures, puts a description up, and puts it up for sale on some centralized Goodwill site or Goodwill Austin site. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do they sell it on Goodwill or do they sell it on eBay or both?
Well, when it first started off, when Shop Goodwill was kicked off, we weren't getting as much as we should be. So we started posting up like the really high value stuff on eBay. But as Shop Goodwill now, after six years now since I left, it's grown a lot. Shop Goodwill now, they don't need to rely on eBay as much anymore.
Okay, so they have a big enough audience and their traffic is strong enough to. That's interesting. Do they allow third party sellers? I wonder that.
No, they don't allow.
Not yet. Not yet. My bet is. So I bet you there's someday they might think about it. Why wouldn't they, right? If they can make a VIG or a little fee on it, I'm sure they've thought about it, right? I'm sure that's been talked about by a rebel. Okay, so they go along. They put it up. Is their stuff all auction or is it buy it now? I haven't been to their site, to be honest with you.
For the Shop Goodwill, they usually start it off at an auction.
Okay.
So what we do is how my previous boss showed me was to start off at $9.99. So that way it brings in the audience at nine.
Right.
The people who wants to start off low, and then the people who wants to start off high. So like the magic number we usually start off at $9.99.
Okay, and then plus shipping, I assume.
Correct.
Plus and shipping. And a handling charge that's included in the shipping. Okay, and so that covers your cost. Did the handling charge ever get adjusted based on volume? Because I imagine way back they were only selling, you know, let's just say 100 units, and now they're probably, since 6 years later and it's grown, they're selling 1,000 units. Or because it's done, so more than likely it's actually probably a profit center now. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I bet you it is. I like their thinking. Okay, so they sell it and they ship it right from that e-commerce site.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they ship it right out of there. Okay, yep. so they're sending out packages right out all the way. So that was your world for a while.
Yeah.
You decide to leave, you get a real job, you say, whoa, this is definitely not for me, but I've learned a skill set and I could use that skill set. what's interesting to me too, and I bet you a whole bunch of people are thinking the same thing, is you have inside knowledge on how a major product supplier, right, or sourcing source works.
Correct.
That's probably an advantage, isn't it?
Yes, super advantage. And the super advantage also is that it's not coming out of your pocket, right? So you're listing things that were given to you, some products that you're not aware of, and then you list it and you see how much money it goes for. You're like, wow. And then you just add it into your knowledge database in your brain.
You must have a very large knowledge database, right? Just, I mean, did you list stuff and you're like, there's no way this will ever sell. This store manager is crazy, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden at the end say, holy smokes.
Yeah. So like I will like help ran the computer. That's my bread and butter, the computer side of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I saw the guy, he was just processing old RAMs, like RAMs that were like 512 megabytes. I was like, what are you doing, man? That's like old stuff. Like,
nobody wants that. Nobody's going to use that.
Right. But then they'll take all the computers apart and then just bundle all the RAMs together, a set of maybe 300 or 200 or 100 sticks, and then we'll see it fly for like $100 and stuff. So, whoa, I did not know this kind of stuff.
Right. You would have just thrown it inside of the road, right? And
right.
And how many people think exactly the same way? Love it. So you learn a whole bunch and you decide, hey, I'm going to get into this business. Was it that quick, or did you start it up while you were still working?
When I was working the first year, I just quit reselling, and then I just started slowly repicking it back up.
Okay. So. And did you go right into video games because that's what you knew, or what did you do?
When I first started selling off, actually was like any other beginner. I wanted to know like what item sales and so forth. So after I graduated from college and the economy was down, I started doing some research, and the first product that I tried to sell were baby clothes, believe it or not.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now, so let's ask the obvious question. What would you know about baby clothes?
I didn't know anything.
They were abundant, right? That's all it was. So they were everywhere, right? You go and you could see them at every yard sale. There's a bazillion baby clothes, right? That's funny.
Yeah, they're like saying get the children's place or and the gymboree clothes.
Right.
I was reading all these articles and trying to go to clearance sales, and I was just this young guy, single guy, no kids, and it just looked super awkward, right?
Bro, sure.
And then I decided to like, I started reflecting. I was like, well, what were some stuff that I like, you know, enjoy doing? You know, what is something around my house or wherever I can start off so it's not really costing me out of pocket? And then I was like, well, I like video games and sports. And I started looking at the prices on video games, and then I was like, oh, wow. And so I started like looking for that stuff, and I started with video games, and then now the video game market is really tough to get into now. So I started to, you know, get experience working at the shop Goodwill, and that totally expanded my knowledge. Now I look for all types of inventories. So,
and in your flea market booth, because you have a flea market booth that's open on Saturday and Sundays, correct?
Correct.
And that is loaded with video. I mean, is that almost generally what you sell in that store?
Right. Mostly it's video games, but then to bring in people into the shop, I realized it's still in the same field as entertainment, the video game entertainment. I started bringing in Pokemon cards, and I started bringing in Legos, and just as a test demo. And then I saw like how much of a hit was that. So I sell Pokemon cards, and I sell Legos, and I sell Pokemon figures and Pokemon plushes and Mario plushes. And that also is another source of money coming in too.
But, and because those buyers are all the same people, typically, right? I mean, they tend to be.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. 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 And so if you bring somebody who's looking for a particular Lego, then all of a sudden, wow, I didn't realize you have video games too, and that kind of thing. When I saw the pictures of it, the common thing I was thinking, he doesn't have the games in the cases, right? So those are kept separate. So it's just a case out there. So you don't have to generally worry about people stealing the games, because that's one of the big things that happens, right? But correct. How do you protect, is your space locked in the rest of the time that you're not there?
Yes, it is locked. And then there's also a security patrol guy.
Okay.
When I'm not there, well, when the place is closed, there's a secure patrol officer.
And then somebody, is thinking, hey, wait, are you there every weekend? Do you work every single weekend?
Not every week. I usually check in on Sundays because I really like the customer interaction and so forth. So I just show up, just to show up.
But you got a guy that works for you there that tends to be there.
Yeah, he's there every weekend.
Okay, he works weekends. That's what he wants, or you know, he understands that's his world, right? Do you price things, or does he price things?
We both price things. After I showed him like what my pricing strategies were, he picked up on it. So, and
I'm assuming he's another game nut like you, right? He's into it. He knows it.
Right. Yeah, he's a super game nut too. So I got lucky with him. Find someone that knows how to sell video games.
Is it a site that people can come and sell you games or trade games too?
Yes, correct.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, from time to time. I mean, we have people trade in some really good games, some rare games, even the new generation games like PS4 or Xbox One. It's crazy. Like, they could go to like a local competition, but they literally wait for the weekend just to come by and trade it into us because we treat them so well,
you know? Well, and that's a key. I remember having Peter Cassissa, who has the a trading post in outside of Chicago. He says the same thing. I have to pay relative premium to what you're buying at a yard sale or whatever, because they're taking the time to come to me. And you know, the best part, Steve, is they're taking the time to come to me. So you're not spending your time. Your guy is there. And so when somebody else takes the time, that's something you didn't have to go find. And that time is valuable because you have limited time, right?
Correct.
So where do you buy most of your stuff?
Where do I buy most of my stuff? Most of my stuff are like at garage sales and at the bins, and then people trading in their stuff to us. That's all my sources of revenue, inventory coming in.
Okay, so you got three sources. So let's break them down. So we already talked about the trade-in or people just coming and selling a collection. Do you get calls to come and look at somebody's house? Hey, my son had a collection and he's no longer here, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay, yes, so you have those and you can go do that. All right, and then you have the yard sale circuit. Are you out every – I mean, I don't know how they work in Austin. In my area, they tend to be a Friday and a Saturday, most yard sales in my market. How about yours?
Ours is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And oh, okay.
Yes, and sometimes the estate sales run on Thursdays.
Okay, so you'll even do an estate sale.
Correct.
And when you go to – I mean, do you stay in your lane knowing that, you know, you're looking for video games or related collectibles? Or have you deviated outside of that?
I deviate out there. I'll look for things that will fund my video games, but then I also look for things that I can sell on my eBay store.
Okay, because you have an eBay store, you can sell pretty much anything, right?
Yes.
Are there things you know, you're not buying baby clothes anymore, are you?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, I buy baby carriers and breast pump milks, so...
Breast pump milk?
Yeah, breast pump milks. They actually, they bring in some decent money. So.
Okay. And so you would sell that on eBay?
Correct.
Okay. And so your channel, those three channels, that channel, how many different, is there a limit to what you would sell on there? Have you sold bicycles, for example, or anything large like that?
No, I usually sell that locally, like on OfferUp or something.
Okay,
like
so you'll actually do that too then. Oh, it's great. Okay, yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, I sit back and I think about the time when you were selling on eBay. How long ago is it when you started selling on eBay?
I restarted up selling like about 2.5 years ago.
You restarted, but going back to when you first started, the difference between...
That was back in 2008 when I started selling.
Right. So the difference between then and now, how significant is it?
Oh, it changed a lot, like pricing wise and finding the inventory. But I mean, people now are shopping a lot more on eBay, so it helps out a lot tremendously.
And the ease of listing, I assume, is significantly different, correct?
Oh yeah, it was very complex. And especially shipping. Shipping was very complex back 10 years ago.
So tell me what it would have been like for you, relative, because I don't think some people have context. They don't understand.
Well, the listing and then the pictures, they would charge additional costs for pictures, and they changed that way. And then insertion fees, and the main one was the shipping part was the biggest hassle of them all. especially if you do international shipping.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing international shipping, they didn't have the global shipping program with eBay, right? But you have international people who want to buy from you, and some of them are not a good country to send to, and then some of them are, you just don't know. And then you literally, they didn't have a label back then. So you literally had to go to the post office and handwrite the custom
international. Standing in line, yep.
And standing in line, right? And it was just crazy. I don't think they even had a pickup back then either. They didn't offer that service too.
It was very expensive. And then the other thing is certain countries you just never, you know, everybody learned, don't send anything to Russia. Nothing ever made it into Russia. It would get taken from wherever it was in their system. And you would never, and you ate it. I mean, they'd be like, hey, sorry. Mm-hmm. You're out. And so everybody just said, okay, never going to send anything to Russia again. Never going to. I mean, there were those countries that you just always got, you know, you just always seem, and I don't think the people ripped you off. I just don't think they ever made it to them for them. And so you just lose the money. Today, I love global shipping. It just makes it easy because when there's, as long as you get the product to global shipping, it's out of your hands, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. What other tips would you say, I mean, you're having you have a really strong eBay business. What other tips would you say are the things that allow you to have success now versus the limited success you had way back?
That's a good question. Repeat that question one more time.
Well, I'm thinking of, you know, you had some success, modest success back, you know, and part of it is way back in 2008, most things you would probably list, they probably sold, right? But you're having a lot more success now. So I'm looking for what you're doing different is part of the reason why you're having more success.
Oh, it's offering a variety of different products and diversifying and bringing all types of customers into my shop. Right. But I think I see it as let's say I sell clothes, for example, I have one good set of clothes, right? And then next thing you know, they browse through my whole store and so forth and see what other products I have. But it also creates like a huge following too. And that's what happened, because I just get repeated customers now. And then I also improve on my customer service skills. Back in my younger years, when I had to deal with a refund, I would be outraged. And I think that's the main one that I improved a lot over the years was my customer service.
Because it's outside of your control. It's going to happen, right? And you're going to have, if you sell, you're going to have a percentage. How many of us, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because think about it. You as a buyer, you've had to return things, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Have you ever thought about the other guy that you're returning it to before the fact that you're reselling, right? You probably never did. Now you do.
Yep.
But generally, you're like, hey, you know, this just doesn't fit. I bought it. They don't fit. So I'm sending them back, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes we forget that there is a person on the other end of that. And in your case, you realize, you know, this is part of it. You know, I mean, this is part of what you do. When you sell, you're going to have returns, right?
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I proved a lot was, because when you look back at my younger years, I look at the way I did things and the way I did things now. You got to have a model in place, right? You got to have like keywords, like good keywords in place, good pictures and good description and good customer service and fast shipping. I put in all the stuff I learned at Goodwill, and also as my time, as I got older, like what people want. And because you do that, you start building feedback and a good reputation. And so I think that's what also improved my store tremendously over the years is it's those categories where I kept improving, where it'll be more efficient and more reliable for the
right. That reputation is the reliability, right? That's really mm-hmm. what people are saying. Hey, your reputation's strong, therefore that equates that you are reliable. It is safe to buy from you. You know, it's interesting. You talk about keywords now. Where in Amazon, right? They have all the back end keywords and then the negative keywords and all the rest of that kind of jazz. How does it work with eBay? Where are you putting your keywords? I mean, I assume it's in title first, right?
Right, it's in title first. But what I usually do is look at sold listings, right? And I look at the person who got the most money.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I look at the person who had, like, I look at the recently sold,
Okay, so let's just say Steve's coffee cup here. So you're looking at coffee cups that have sold recently.
Right.
And are you sorting it? So you're looking at completed listings, sold only. And how are you sorting it?
I'm sorting it by recently sold, because the reason why I pick recently sold is because it gives me a way to understand when's the last one that's been sold, and also gives me
current market price, maybe? Is that what you're equating it to? The market changed and the price today is $15, correct, where in the past it might have been $60. Well, that means there's a decline, right? Is that what you're thinking?
Correct. Okay. Yes, that's exactly. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I look at that, and then I was like, okay, well, this one sold within – this one currently sold today, and then 4 or 5 days ago, the same exact one sold, right? So I look at that, but then also look at, okay, well, who got – more money for the item. And then on top of that, so I'll use sell similar, I will use their keywords, but then also I look at other people's listings, maybe 5 or 6 other people's listings, and see if they're missing any other keywords that I can cram into there, because keywords are really important when you're selling.
I think this is really important to note, and that sounds like a lot of research where most people are not doing the research. So my bet is your average selling price is probably higher because you took the extra time.
Correct.
And here's the thing to understand is that Q buys at a very, very, very low price. So therefore, your profit margin on that particular item is so significantly higher than anyone else's to begin with. So you're not trying to make your money in volume as much as you're trying to make the most you can per item. Is that a fair
correct
way to say that?
Yes.
So you
have a price average sell through rate that I want.
Average price per item. You're looking at increase or trying. You have a target for that. Would you mind saying what it is that you're trying to get?
I usually shoot for like $40 to $50.
Okay, so there's a pro tip right there. So it takes. I just had this conversation with someone this past weekend. So $40 to $50 average ASP, average selling price. It takes just as much effort to sell a $40 to $50 item as it does a $10 to $12 item, generally, right? Generally it does. And so therefore, if your average purchase price is what would you say your average purchase price is?
Oh man.
I mean, it's an average. So I understand that you're paying $40 for a game system and you're paying, you know, 8 cents for a, you know, basket full of crap, you know?
Yeah, basket. So let's say I usually itemize the product, so it'll be like $5 to $10.
Okay, so your cost is $5 to $10.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's your cost. I mean, that's your ASC, right? Your average selling cost or average APC, average purchasing cost. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty good margin. Now, you know, let's just think about this, and I'll equate it to Amazon because it's good. I sell shoes, and if you buy shoes wholesale, right, which I do, right, so a vendor, let's say the retail price is $100, generally, not all the time, but generally you're going to pay $50, right, and they use that Keystone markup. So you're going to pay $50, and most times plus shipping. Sometimes you can get free shipping, and sometimes you can get below that cost, but if you're paying wholesale, not distributor prices, and so at, you know, you're paying $50 and they're going to sell for $100. Well, let's just assume Amazon takes their third, right? They're going to take 20 or 30. Let's just say they take 20, and then you get $30 profit on that $50 purchase. So, you know, if it, 30 bucks is a lot of profit, but I had to put out 50 to get that. So in your scenario, when I'm paying $10 for an item that sells for 50 and eBay's going to take, you know, probably $8 of that 50. So that's $42. So that $32 profit on the $10 purchase. So in essence, we're talking the same thing. You're going to make about the same amount of money, but you put out $10 where I had to put out 50 for my shoes.
Wow.
And the difference is, I mean, you could buy 5 times the amount that I can. Because,
correct,
right? Because you could buy 5 $10 items, right? That's pretty simple math for my $150. And then you'd be like, wait, Steve, but it's easier to find those $50 pair of shoes than it is to find that $10 item. I would argue it's not, because everybody can find those $50 pair of shoes, right? Because that's like, you know, Nike's producing quite a few, right? And they're not just selling to Steve, they're selling to everybody else. And therefore, it's not unfortunately, in the shoe business, it doesn't sell at 100, because if I'm selling shoes and you're selling the exact same pair of shoes, the only difference we have is price.
Right.
So therein lies the challenge. So the skilled buyer, and this is my, I'm getting off my soapbox soon, I promise you, is to know what that $10 item that you can sell it. That's the art. And that's where you have an advantage. Is that fair? Right. My long way to get to that same place, that is not easy.
Right. Because your item is where a lot of people probably get that same product, right?
Yep. Same place.
It's like the newest, yep. And you pretty much have to price very competitively, whereas mine is like, it's either discontinued or is used or...
it's supply and demand. You have the demand is there, right? You know the demand is there, right? Because of your experience. And that's where the art is. But how many, you know, think about this. And I think this is something that, that people don't spend enough time on. How much research do you do or have you done to learn that that item can sell, right? It's been time, right? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time and over and over and over again to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
They, as they say, what success leaves clues too, right? So you start to sell certain things, you see patterns.
Right. All right.
So what have you learned? You know, where do you learn most of your stuff? Is it in your store or is it out in the world? Is it staring in your phone or where do you learn most of your stuff?
Wow. I'm always learning every day. So what I do, personally, you always got to look at people who are better than you. Mm. You know, you got to look at your competition or, and, you know, you build a network and then you you ask them, hey, do you mind sharing me your store? And so that's where most of my learning is from. I'm learning from other people, right? They'll pass me information to me and I pass them information.
Right. Quid pro quo. You share, right? You give and you get.
Yeah, correct.
Right. Yep. Okay.
So,
The network, you said networking. I mean, I think that that's important. So where are you meeting these people?
Yeah, so I would meet these people at garage sales where I bump into them a lot. So we're cool with each other. And then I also meet a lot of people at the bins. So I'll be like, man, what are you selling there? And I'll be studying it, what they're selling, and I'll start talking to them and see where they're selling their items are. And then I learned a lot also when I worked at Shop Goodwill. The thing with Shop Goodwill and the beauty of Shop Goodwill is when I came into there, I only sold video games and electronics, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I got to see when they were hiring people, I got to see people who have other level of expertise with boutique clothes or jewelry or antiques and or shoes and boots and et cetera, et cetera. And then I picked up things from them. So that was my main knowledge is learning through Shop Goodwill, being surrounded, like I say, with people who are very knowledgeable in other expertise.
Because you got to see why it would sell for $9.99 and why it would sell for $99.99, right?
Correct.
That's when you see that over and over again, you start to see, I see a pattern here, right?
Correct.
Those patterns, the ability to recognize those patterns over time, quite frankly, is the best predictor of, what's the best predictor of future performance? Past performance, right? Yeah, that's common sense, right? I love it. So I'm thinking about, you know, the people that are, I mean, you're not really into Amazon. You're really a big eBay guy and you have this other, you know, other channel and then maybe some other local stuff. How come you've never taken the big jump into Amazon, going all in, doing the wholesale thing or doing huge volume of RA and stuff like that? What is that not attractive to you?
I have done Amazon. I have done liquidation. I have done drop shipping. It's just like I say in the past, it just didn't fit my style. It didn't fit my model. And I didn't feel comfortable selling on those platforms. And I feel comfortable selling at, locally, but also at my booth, and then also on eBay. Yeah.
So I'm just trying to understand why. Is it, and I don't want to use this as a negative. Did it become more like a job then? I'm just trying to understand that. What didn't you like about it?
It's because most of my products were used, right?
Okay.
They weren't like brand new and so forth. And I was selling video games, believe it or not, on Amazon, right? But I also had a really high return rate.
Oh, interesting.
Right, because with, and I was, I'll be honest with you, I was making $100,000 on Amazon selling video games, 100 mm-hmm. plus, right? And
you were gross selling. You mean you were selling that much?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't factor in the net profit, but that's how much my gross sales were. And it was just a really high return rate. I noticed that with me, even though I wrote the right description and so forth. But then that time I didn't have FBA. So I'm always contemplating thinking about, maybe I should do Amazon FBA. I haven't did that yet. But at the same time, I also have a video game booth where I can get the same amount in cash. Or write the money immediately paid to me. So Amazon is a good platform, but it's just dealing with the high returns and so forth. And it doesn't sound like it's for you.
That's awesome that you recognize that. I mean, I tell people that all the time. There's somebody coming up on my show not too long that's going to sell $1 million on eBay. Mm-hmm. Now think about that, right? Great. But I was just with a guy who was selling $20 million on Amazon this past 2 days ago, or yesterday, I guess I was with him, right? And so which one's right? The one that's right for you.
Correct.
Not him and not yours. You've got to find your lane and stay in it, whatever you're comfortable with, because otherwise you're going to create yourself a job. And my advice is don't create a job for yourself. Somebody disagreed with me on that. They're like, well, Steve, it is a job. And I'm like, well, you could think it's a job. I mean job in the negative connotation, where there are boundaries that are so strong that you don't have freedom. I want you to have freedom to do what you want. And maybe that's, you know, like a Gary Vee working 18 hours a day. That's your thing, man. If that's the way you're built, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's not the way I'm built. And that's okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right, so what's next for Q? What do you see next, or what are you working on for the future?
Well, I always wanted to give back to the community and so forth like that, learning off from my wins and my losses and my success and failures. And
you'll have all those.
Yeah.
As everybody does.
Yeah, I went through success, and then I went through losing a reputation and losing a brand and then rebranding myself. I've been through it all.
Okay.
Losing trust, losing relationships, and building relationships. I've been through it all, and I'm in the process now of starting up a YouTube channel and also starting up my own personal Facebook page, where I want to offer my skill set and offer like consultations and group sessions for intermediate or beginners or experts of all levels. And I feel like
you have something to offer. And that's cool, because, you know, somebody said that to me this weekend. He'll sell, I think, $2+ million, and he's incredible. He said, you know, Steve, the thing you can't forget is that people helped you all along the way. So all of a sudden, I'm not supposed to help somebody else? No way. Right. No way. All right. And I agree with you, and I applaud you for that. Tell me what your YouTube channel is.
It's Eagle Eyes Nation.
Eagle?
Yeah, like your... like an eagle, like you're scouting things. So
Eagle Eye or Eyes?
Eyes, plural.
Eyes Nation. I'm going to put it in. I'm just going to pull it up right now. I just want to make sure I got the link. All right, I got it. Eagle Eye Nation. Oh, there's a lady with you. I see her.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to have a link for that on the website. And I assume the Facebook name is the same?
Yes,
correct. Okay, so Eagle Eyes Nation. And is there a charge for the Facebook group?
No, it's all donation based.
Okay.
So where they feel they don't, they it's whatever. It's a free service. So.
Okay. Awesome. I love it, and I love the thing that was attractive to me about Q was his passion. I mean, you can hear it in his voice, but when you see him and you see how excited he gets, there's a passion, and I think that's so healthy. Have you ever felt this alive? Doing something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I took a break from it and then I got back into it after leaving my corporate job, I was like, the stress just went off of me because it's every American mindset is to graduate, go get a job, and then
move up, right?
Yeah, right. And I was like, no, that's just not me, right? And what was holding me back becoming a full-time reseller was my coworkers. You know, they're like, no, man, you can't do that. You got to lose all your benefits. You got to lose all this. And it's not a stable check. And I was like, no, but I'm really good at this. I was really passionate about it. I was really happy. I enjoy waking up early for garage sales, and I enjoy working late at nights and so forth. And I don't keep track of my time because I enjoy it so much. Like right now, this podcast, I enjoy talking about it. It's like, I woke up early and, you know, talking to you about it, and it doesn't bother me because I enjoy it.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you really, really want to pursue a reselling career or any career, if you want to be an engineer or a doctor or whatever it may be, but if you have this feeling that I'm having where you just enjoy doing it every single day, it doesn't matter how many hours you put into it, then that's the right job. That's the right
career. That's exactly what it is. And you said something else that I think is very, very serious for people to hear. The reason you didn't go into this is because your coworkers were saying, oh, you can't do that, right? Oh, what are you talking about? How their beliefs, what they believe, they transfer to you, on you, and then you start to believe it. And so you really got to take that stuff serious and say, wait a second, I know myself, I know I can be successful, and therefore I'm going to do it and not let somebody else hold you back. Because quite frankly, that's what they're doing. And most people aren't happy. Those people are not happy. They wish. My bet is you're going to hear back from those people as you continue to have success, and they're going to be like, wait, can you show us too how to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I mean, that, believe it or not, Steve, like when I had my evaluation, during my one of the things that really struck me was I was like, my boss asked me and told me, I wish you put in more time into our company like you do with your e-commerce business. And I'm like, oh heck no. I was like, wow.
Oops.
Yeah, I was like, he was like, what? So he's like, I wish you had the same passion
right.
like you do with e-commerce. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, you know.
But that's a clue. That's a clue, right? I mean, that's they saw it. Everybody else, I love it, man. I'm pumped. I'm literally, I can't wait to get going. I'm jazzed right now. All right, so I have the links to the website. I have or to your YouTube channel and to your Facebook group. So one of the things, the goals of this podcast is to help people move forward. And I think right then and there, you've really got to take in. I think, you know, the takeaway for me is, you know, stop listening to others, you know, believe in yourself. Give us a tip or trick that you can help somebody who's stuck and help them move forward.
Well, before you pursue your passion, it's always good just to have the numbers in place, have a structure, make sure that you get a reliable source or a reliable revenue coming in, right? But if you have all that, then you shouldn't be worrying so much because you have goals in place, right? But the main thing is you got to be surrounded by people who understand you, the people that understand like what you're doing. Mm. And if you have those people that are surrounding you, then you should go along the way. If you have other people that are really good friends, like my fiance, she's very supportive of me. She will see me miserable coming home at night. I have to work late at night doing auditing and looking at numbers and fixing reports. And she just saw me miserable. But then she also saw the passion in me when I wake up really early in the morning at 7 or 6 o'clock, or even 5 o'clock in the morning, and don't come home till like 7 p.m. because I'm busy sourcing and finding deals and so forth. And that's like she saw that. And then I met some people in other Facebook groups that does reselling, and we have our own personal chat, and you know, and they were very supportive. And just seeing people who are like-minded like you, and also having people around you that are supportive, will come a long way of pushing you towards to whatever career that you want to be in.
I love it. I was at an event this weekend, and it was somebody new. A friend was bringing somebody new into this, and the guy's like, "I've never seen so many people who are positive, like all positive, and kind of even though they're competitors, they're all still positive, talking in a positive way about what they do." Mm-hmm. I'm like, welcome to our world. There is, You know, I cut that negativity out of my life. I don't know the negative people because I just don't associate with them. It is very exciting, and I think your advice is very sound, and I agree with you. Surround yourself with those people, and you will have success. Man, I wish you nothing but success. I thank you so much for coming on. I know I got you up early. I really appreciate it. Make it a great year. I know it will be. I can't wait to have you back to hear more and more about the next level. Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it, Steve.
Take care. I love when somebody enjoys what they do, it comes across and it doesn't feel like work for them. You can see that he's enjoying himself. You can see it when you go out and check out his YouTube channel. And again, I have links on the website for this. Absolutely go watch and just understand that this could be you. You know, if this part is you and this is the way you're wired, man, go all in on that. Get that junk out of your life and go and make a difference in the world the way you want to. Man, that's just an awesome, awesome thing. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.